Pollution and overpopulation, twin threats to the state's most precious resource, it's water. We'll take your calls just ahead. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, a look at the state of Florida's troubled waters captured in a new film. We want your calls now at 549-2937. Speaking of water, people in this area were part of that massive pipeline protest at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. We'll hear from one local activist. A look at the most dangerous gifts of the year, which toys you don't want under the tree this season, plus Cole Pepper as the Jaguars are officially out of the playoff chase. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, the looming crisis for Florida's waterways. Pollution generated from everything from fertilizer runoff to poorly treated wastewater and failing septic tanks is fouling our rivers and streams. Combined with the impacts of a rapidly growing population, it's a toxic combination for the state. A new film, Troubled Waters, looks at these issues, and it's billed as a call to action for all of Florida's rivers, lakes, springs, and aquifers. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Jimmy Orth of the St. John's River Keeper. They are distributing this film. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Quint White, who heads up the Marine Science Research Institute at Jacksonville University.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you both. And when we talk about the state's troubled waters, threats to the state's rivers, lakes, and streams, what are your thoughts and questions? We're talking water this morning. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. You can also weigh in on Facebook. Jimmy Orth, let's begin with you. This is the River Keeper's new film looking at a what you call a water crisis, not only for the St. John's River, which is your big interest, but the whole state.
Absolutely. Yeah, we looked at all of the threats that are threatening the St. John's. A lot of them are similar throughout the state of Florida to all of our waterways are facing major threats, as you outlined some of those in the intro. Pollution problems, but also we're overpumping our aquifer. And so the impacts of overuse are having a major impact too. So one of the things we wanted to show in this film is how our groundwater and our surface waters are intricately connected. It's really one big hydrologic system. And what's happening, we have to look at the cumulative impacts of what we're doing to groundwater, what we're doing to surface water, and all of these impacts throughout the state. They really add up to a recipe for disaster with all the incoming growth.
The growth is a big piece of this, particularly in Central Florida. Quint White, in Central Florida, there's a strong push to withdraw hundreds of millions of gallons out of the St. John's River to accommodate all of the people that are moving in down there. How big of an issue is that?
Well, it's a huge issue, and I don't think people would really appreciate it because they think we have plenty of water. And that's sort of a misconception. And it's fueled by the fact that we can turn on the faucet and get plenty of water. We can turn on our sprinkler systems and water our yards with the drinking water, which is a real, I think, a philosophical problem. But, you know, I should point out this is not just a local or even a state issue. It's really a global issue. Clean water is going to become a major problem worldwide. It already is. And you simply look at the drought affecting California, the water quality in Detroit, and you come up with these problems and you begin to think, okay, well, boy, I'm glad it's not us. Well, folks, it is us, but it's happening to us so slowly and gradually that we're not sort of realizing it. You know, I'm saying a lot more often now that, you know, I think water is our next oil. It's going to be the thing that we think we're running out of. And we're not going to run out of water, but we're going to run out of cheap water. And that's a huge difference.
Cheap, clean water.
Exactly.
549-2937. We'll go to your calls in a moment. Jimmy Orth, later in the hour, we're going to speak with a local activist who took part in those protests at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. The protesters called themselves water protectors. And they were, at least in the short term, successful. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is going to deny the oil company an easement to build a pipeline through or a tunnel underneath a river that the Native American tribes said would endanger their clean water. The entire world, it seems, is waking up to this issue because the thousands of people that went to that protest came from around the globe.
Yeah, I think that was a positive sign, at least, to see that people are standing up to protect local waterways. One of the things we really wanted to capture in this film is that only way we're going to solve these water problems, these pollution problems and water use problems, is us. If the public gets involved, we can't just rely on our government to make those to solve those problems. We, each of us, has to get involved. And so one of the things we wanted to do with the film that really correlates to what happened, I think, out there in the Dakotas, is showing how people can get activated and they can make a difference. And I think that you've seen that all of that hard work that those people put in and the sacrifice that they made has paid off, at least up to this point.
As you said, though, Quint White, people don't tend to get mobilized until they see an immediate and visible threat. This is you define this water crisis in Florida as a very slow moving issue that hasn't really reached a tipping point.
Well, we see things like, you know, we're talking about the green monster, which happened a few years ago, and the St. John River turns green. And people go, well, what? Well, we've been talking about excess pollutants in the St. John River. And so when you get global warming, which we're having, and we're seeing sea level rise, we're seeing changes in salinity in the river, we're seeing all these things happen, but it's happening very, very slowly. And so people want to say, oh, well, but it's not really our fault. Well, yeah, it is. I mean, I hate to say it like that, but, you know, Pogo said it very well many, many years ago for the first Earth Day poster. You know, I've seen the enemy and he is us. And people don't always understand that they can make a difference, because if everybody just sort of took care of their own little piece of the world and looked at the amount of water they use, the amount of energy they use, how much they drive, you know, how much fertilizer they put on their yard. If everybody did their little tease to try to reduce what they used, we could have a huge impact. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it in energy consumption already. And we are seeing it in water consumption. It is beginning to drop. And so I'm optimistic about the future in some respects. But in our country, we seem to only react to things when they become a crisis. We know there's a problem, but we wait until it becomes a crisis, and then we react. And to the credit to the American people, we have a pretty good track record. But boy, I think it costs us a lot of extra money.
Well, and that's in the film. We really wanted to let people know that crisis is on our doorstep. And that's really, you know, we may think that it's far off in the future, but it's here. Because if you look at the fact that we have not resolved some major existing pollution problems. We haven't done enough to resolve those problems. Yet we have all of this growth that's coming into our state. That's going to be more impacts on top of the existing impacts. And again, that becomes a problem that becomes harder for us to resolve and more expensive to resolve. And we're starting to see some of the outcomes of that. In Central Florida, or South Florida, we saw the impacts on the St. Lucie River. We saw the impacts on the Indian River Lagoon, where they were just covered in algal blooms and dead fish. We've seen it in Polk County, where we had this massive sinkhole that opened up and 215 million gallons of radioactive wastewater from a phosphate mine dumped into our aquifer. We're seeing these impacts happen throughout the state. And so we're hoping that it's a wake-up call for people to get involved and solve some of these problems before it becomes too late.
And by the way, you can screen the new film, Troubled Waters. It streams straight from the website of the St. John's Riverkeeper. If you visit their website, you can organize a screening. Tips on how to do that as well. We'll keep talking about that as we take your calls. As we discuss the state's troubled waters, that's the name of a new film looking at the issue. It's 549-2937. Karen is in Mandarin this morning. Hey, Karen. Good morning.
Good morning. I was calling about the pipeline that's supposed to be going through Florida under the Santa Fe River, and it's very confusing to me with all the aquifers that run through Florida that this is even a consideration. And my other question was about Jacksonville, how we can get people to understand that we shouldn't be growing lawns. I mean, people talk about it, but I look around me, and there's billions of green lawns, and I just don't understand how people don't care that all those nitrates are going into the river and causing these issues. And I really appreciate you taking my call. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Karen. Let's talk about both of those one by one. The first issue she wanted to know about was this, I think it's called the Sable Trail Pipeline. That's near the Santa Fe River, that planned project here in Florida.
Right. Is that the one I'm thinking is coming in through Georgia?
Yes.
And actually, they've been fighting it in Georgia, and I think successfully managed to to slow it, if not stop it already.
And it would go through Alachua, Levy, Marion, Suwannee, and Gilchrist counties. It would connect to another pipeline in Osceola County.
It's actually built, being built right now through Georgia. And what they said would not happen has already happened. And on the Withlacoochee in Georgia, it actually had a leak already and was causing problems. And they also had some sinkholes as a result of it. So it's already showing some of the potential impacts that can result from the pipeline. And, of course, in Florida, we have the same issues. It's the same aquifer that runs up into Georgia that we have here in Florida. And so what we're concerned about is this, is as it goes through these areas where there's springs and where they have these really fragile environments, there's potential for major problems and threats to our drinking water supply.
What would you say to those listening who are on the side of the pipeline construction and say, look, we need this energy. We need to get the oil or the natural gas to power homes and businesses. I think the environmental threat, which, of course, that is your point of view, both of you. But I think the environmental threat is less important than the need to get this energy production going.
And I think there's some valid arguments on that side. I think the problem, though, is that we continue to try to use fossil fuels, that we need to start moving towards a policy where we're really prioritizing the renewable energy sources that are out there. And what happens is when we build pipelines, we essentially it's a continuation of the status quo. We're just enabling ourselves to continue to use these fuels that can be dangerous to our water supply. And we see that. That's one of the real concerns, is we have to balance this, of course. But our water, once it's polluted, it's very hard to clean it up. And it's something that we have to have. We have to have drinking water, and we can't take a chance with it.
Yeah, I'm afraid that we're still trying to use technology that is sort of inappropriate for what we're trying to do. And the reason we want to use a pipeline is it's a cheap way to move fossil fuels. It's a cheap way to move gas and natural gas. And that's one of the things we've got to be concerned with, because you're talking about, yeah, we need this for jobs and economy, but nobody wants to come to a Florida that's a polluted Florida. And so I think we've got to understand that we have got to have a strong economy, yes, but we must have a healthy environment, because if we have a damaged environment, people aren't wanting to move the state.
Katie is in Jacksonville. Hi, Katie. Good morning.
Hi. When I hear these conversations about water conservation, I hear a lot of talk about green lawns and this kind of thing, but I rarely hear people talk about the impact of the American diet on how much water we use, and how reducing meat consumption can really have a huge impact on how much water we use nationwide.
Yeah, thanks for that. And we never did get around to the other caller's comment about our love of our big green lawns, which isn't the most energy efficient practice.
Now, I have said many times, if I were a benevolent dictator, I would ban St. Augustine grass. That would be the first thing I'd do.
Yeah.
And to our other caller, and she's exactly right. We like eating high on the food chain, and that's expensive water-wise. And that goes back to personal choices. If people can look at what they do, maybe a meatless Monday. You know, you do certain things that can sort of help the whole situation. And every little bit helps. And that's the part that I think we've got to send the message out to people. It really does make a difference if you and a few other people make these choices. And people are gradually doing it. But I do get concerned that we're going to wait until a crisis occurs, and then we're going to, oh my gosh, how did this happen? Well,
and other states have seen that. Look at California's crisis over water, for example.
Well, and I go to Detroit. You know, that was a decision made because of economics. We want to have cheap water, and we don't want to treat it. And boom.
You're talking about Flint, too. Flint,
I'm sorry, I'm saying Detroit. Yeah. It's Flint, Michigan. I'm sorry, I'm probably.
Well, and in California, the same thing. Like you mentioned, they had major drought. And then they had to have a mandate that they reduce water consumption by 25%, which was huge.
Big
but
pain
they did
point
it.
For people, yeah.
But they did it. And the point is that it's possible to do, and it's possible to do without really a lot of challenges. I think in California they proved that it could be done. It didn't harm their economy significantly. And people were able to make those changes. We can conserve water. There's a lot of room for conserving water through our diet and through a lot of other lifestyle choices. It's just a matter of the public will to do it.
The St. John's Riverkeeper is out with a new film, Troubled Waters, looking at Florida's looming water crisis. You can stream that film at their website, stjohnsriverkeeper.org. You can organize a screening through the website, too. Right now, we're taking your calls. Taylor in Palatka. Hi, Taylor. How are you?
Hey, guys.
Good morning.
I'm good. Good morning. I was just wondering about, like, solutions. So I've been hearing about technologies, like new technologies we can be using, like, to not only, like, conserve our water, but to help not pollute our water, because I've been reading that pollution is actually, like, more dangerous than, you know, the conservation part because of household runoff and, you know, stuff like that. So is there a way we can, like, personally, you know, avoid polluting our water, you know, either through gray water systems or stuff like that?
Oh,
I'm wondering, you know, on comments.
Yeah, there are countless ways you can do this. Gray water systems are a good example of this. This is where you use treated wastewater as your irrigation. The problem is that that takes a different pumping and piping system, and so we call it purple pipe. And it costs as much to put that in as it does to put in your original water supply. And so in new developments, to have that kind of requirement would be beneficial. Mm-hmm. We could see things done with building codes to require low-flow toilets and using alternative water supplies for that kind of thing. Even on your lawns, you can put in water sensors so that you understand that you're not watering when the lawn is already getting wet from rain. Now, we're in a sort of a drought right now and not sure when that's going to break. We may get a rain a little bit here in the next few days, but we've got to pay attention to when we use water and how we use water, and that's where I think some of the technology can help us. We're certainly seeing it on the energy front, where we're seeing LED lights, and we've seen a drop in our energy consumption.
And those changes have sort of been broadly adopted, I think. You're trying to get the water issue in as much of mainstream American thought as those sort of little tweaks to energy changes the average homeowner might be making.
Well, and the average homeowner does it for economic reasons. LED lights are cheaper. You pay a little bit more on the front end, but then you save money on the long end. And so you look at what's happening. The Marine Science Research Institute at JU is a LEED certified building, and we are the lowest energy consumer on the campus. We hope to provide that, you know, yeah. See that expand.
Let's go to Joel in San Marco now. Hi, Joel. Good morning.
Hi, thanks. So an alternative point of view, I think there's more politics going on here that's being portrayed. And I think that Melissa, in your comment about what about people who support the pipeline, your guests there brought up that basically big oil. I think that's what's really going on here. You can't conserve your way to solving your water problem. I think clean water technology is important, but also having a safe, clean supply of abundant energy sources is also important. We have to do both. It's not an either-or proposition. It's both. The optics of running a pipeline underneath a river on Indian Reservation was terrible. I do think the Army Corps could do it without much damage to, or, you know, a high risk. We run pipelines all over this country. There's thousands of miles of pipelines running throughout the United States. I think there's more of a political agenda going on here than just a concern about clean water. We'll have clean water. The technology is there. I agree we have to invest more in it. And I do think it's a problem. I just don't necessarily agree with some of the political agenda that this film is, you know, putting out there.
Thank you, Joel. Jimmy, what about that?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, for us, there is no political agenda. For us, it's we are stating the facts. If you watch the film, you'll see we document some of the major pollution problems that are occurring right now. When you have the majority of our state waterways that do not meet water quality standards, we have a pollution problem. When you see what's happening, as I outlined before, in some of these other waterways where we have massive fish kills, massive algal blooms, we see it on the St. John's too. It's not only a pollution problem, as Quint brought up, it's an economic problem. We saw with what happened in South Florida, when those major algal blooms and fish kills occurred, it devastated local businesses. Joe Butler, who's here in town, who runs Black Creek Outfitters, Joe said, talking to one of his the other outfitters in that area, his business was down 85% after that happened because people don't want to go out and enjoy our waterways. Mm. The pollution problems are happening. They're documented. The water supply problems are happening. We're seeing reduced flows to our springs, and our springs are instrumental to the flow of the St. John's and other waterways. So it's happening here now. This isn't something that we've just made up. And we're seeing in terms of politics, now what we're seeing in politics is we're seeing in Tallahassee, a lot of the environmental protections that have been put in place over the last 30 years are being unraveled or eliminated in some cases. Like, for instance, our growth management in this state, the agency that oversees growth management, the Department of Community Affairs, or previously oversaw growth management, was eliminated a few years ago. And now we don't have the same state oversight that we did to make sure that we're managing growth in a sustainable way. So I think it's, I mean, we're just documenting what is the facts in this film. And of course, we have our own personal opinions about things, but I think you watch the film and you can make up your own mind.
And as I said, this new film, Troubled Waters, streams from your website. You can also order a DVD there at stjohnsriverkeeper.org. You're encouraging people that care about this issue to host their own screenings. How can they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on our website, we have a way you can access us and ask us if you want to have a screening, please do in your home. We'll have some DVDs, but also, of course, you can stream it online. In some cases, we may even be able to have staff come out and help facilitate a dialogue. One of the things to the previous caller's concerns, I think this is important, though, for a dialogue. I mean, I'm not saying that we're right and you're wrong. I'm saying let's talk about this because we do have major problems in this state, and we need to talk about what are the solutions and how we, the citizens, can be part of that solution. Actually, we have to drive that solution. And so I always like to say Senator Bob Graham says. He says, you know, democracy is not – I mean, it is a participatory sport. We cannot remain on the sidelines. We have to be involved. And that's what we're saying is we have to be involved in these issues, and it's up to us if we're going to solve them.
Well, gentlemen, thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jimmy Orth with the St. John's River Keeper. Dr. Quint White heads up JU's Marine Science Research Institute. Later, speaking of water, we'll speak with one Jacksonville activist who took part in the Standing Rock protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline. That's later. But up next, which toys this holiday season you need to not have under the tree for safety reasons. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
The improved and expanded People of Wendover exhibit is on display at the Brevard Museum of History and Natural Science in Cocoa. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll discuss Florida's fascinating prehistoric people and their amazingly well-preserved burials. We'll talk about the notorious Ashley Gang and immigration to Sanford. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. Tune in every Monday night at 11 and discover new music. As one of the most enduring musical genres, blues can give you a shoulder to cry on, a heart to hang on to, and is here to let you know
everything gonna be all right.
Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I said, baby, everything gonna be all right. Let's say.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, when you're shopping for presents for kids this holiday season, you need to avoid trouble in Toyland by making sure the toys you buy are safe. Last year, nearly a dozen children died, and there were more than 254,000 toy-related injuries in U.S. hospital emergency rooms. So, which toys should be on your naughty list? Wayne Hogan, president of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm, is here with a look at the watch list that's World Against Toys Causing Harm. The top 10 toys you need to avoid. Wayne Hogan, good to see you.
Glad to be back.
Thanks for being here. And every year this list comes out, it's sad that we need to draw attention to it, but not all the toys are safe.
Well, they're not. In fact, I have in front of me a book written by the man, Edward Schwartz, who began Watch. He was a products liability expert. This is his book called Proof of Product Defect. And in 1985, he had the chapter 12, a full chapter on toys that are dangerous and kill. And so what we want to do every time we get an opportunity is to identify some of these toys, but specifically identify the types of hazards that parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles should be on the lookout for.
Now, you brought some of the worst offending toys with you right here to the studio. You can look for a video of Wayne talking about these toys on our website later today. Let's talk about these toys. What's this one right here in front of you? Peppy Pups.
Yeah, this is a good example of one of the S's that I talk about. What I think is that parents or grandparents, they should ask themselves in a very slow way, should I buy this for my grandchild or my child? And this is an example. This is an S because this is for strangle. And as I'm unwrapping this, you can see that this long cord attached to this toy
puppy. It's a little dog stuffed animal with a long leash.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's capable then of strangling the child. If it's in a crib, the Consumer Product Safety Commission requires it to be no more than 12, but they don't regulate this, and this is a tremendous damage. You can have the death of a child, but also brain damage that occurs as a result.
So now, Peppy Pups, number one. Now you brought a baby magic doll, which is so popular.
Well, we brought it.
But there's a problem with this.
The problem with it is not the doll itself, but the fact that it is set up in such a way that the child receives this little food from the spoon, but the spoon is so small that it's capable of going down the child's windpipe.
Right.
And because of that, you have to be concerned that it could easily be the parent who's there, but the sister or the brother is going to be participating with this and the next to the other baby.
Yeah, it's Baby Magic Feed and Play Baby, where you can put the baby doll toy in a little high chair and pretend to feed them. And these, so many toys, Wayne, come with these tiny little parts.
They do, and that's the thing to be on the lookout for, these tiny parts with these toys. The other S to think about is the situation of this particular rival assault weapon, effectively.
It's a Nerf shooting gun.
A Nerf gun.
Yeah.
And I'm going to fire it across, hopefully not in a place it, but you want to hear it.
Oh, man.
And so it just bounced off.
That packed a punch, yeah.
You can see that it does. So that has the ability to put out a child.
That literally will shoot your eye out, Ralphie.
It will. And as you may have noticed, the ball that it shot was small, too, and that has the potential to, again, get into a strangle situation. Then the other thing to think about is it sharp? And you can look at this World of Warcraft Warhammer here.
It looks like a Thor hammer.
It is, and it has these sharp edges to it, but also blunt force. And so this particular Warcraft Doomhammer, as it's called, is capable of causing severe damage to a child. And you can imagine the 5-year-old child next to the 3-year-old child, and the 3-year-old child is the one that suffers the blow.
So sharp edges, that can strangle or choke, those are really common warning signs. You also counsel people against buying toys online or at thrift stores.
Well, you have to be careful. If something is out there secondhand, or if it's in a place where you're not going to be able to physically put your hands on it and evaluate it, a couple of things happen. Number one, in the thrift store, the warnings may be gone because the packaging is gone, and you have the situation that something may have been recalled. Yeah. Any number of these toys around the country that come from across the sea, of course, will have been recalled for defects, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission is not going to catch them all. And once they get in the secondhand market, then you run the risk. It's easy to check. You can check with the Consumer Product Safety Commission, their website. You can check with Watch's website, which is called toysafety.org, or we keep a list on our website at terrellhogan.com. You know, truth of the matter is, if these injuries happen, then a person can call personal injury and wrongful death lawyer. We don't want that call to ever have to be made. We'd like for it to be prevented, and that's why every year we try to introduce awareness for the population so that people are careful and they ask themselves, should I buy this?
Right. Let the buyer beware. Do you find that toy manufacturers, as this list gets more and more attention, are changing their practices to try to make toys a little safer?
Well, here's the problem. Used to be the products were made here in the United States. Now they're made, as the whole national discussion has been about, in other countries.
Especially China, but not only China.
And then they
China.
Come in through the ports. There's been a big deal at where they found toys, dangerous toys, at the Savannah port. You can imagine they come in here through the Jacksonville port. And that is a real danger that's out there, and we need to deal with it. They don't have the same product safety concepts that we do. And this book was written 30 years ago, and that was after 15 years after he first announced the article about toys that kill. And so we just want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to at least be aware as to the questions they should ask themselves. Does it shoot? Is it small? Does it strangle? Is it sharp? Or is it hard and capable of causing injury?
Great advice, and so timely. Wayne Hogan of Terrell Hogan, thanks for being with us.
Glad to do.
That list is at terrellhogan.com. Take a look before you go toy shopping. In a moment, one local activist on his experience at Standing Rock.
On the next Fresh Air.
I didn't know where I belonged. I didn't know where I fit. And I worried about that every single day.
Two transgender people featured in the new HBO documentary, The Trans List. Kylar Broaddus directed the Transgender Civil Rights Project. Nicole Maines won a lawsuit against her former school district after she was prevented from using the girls' bathroom. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Get the latest news about WJCT programming information, highlights, and events with the WJCT e-newsletter. Go to WJCT.org and sign up today. WJCT. Log on. Find out.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, on Sunday, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced it will not approve an easement for the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline. Protesters are hailing the news as a victory for Native American tribes and others who flocked to the state for weeks to protest the pipeline. Tribal leaders say it threatens the water supply at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation and also sacred lands and artifacts. Protesters worldwide joined the fight at Standing Rock, including some from here in our area. Local activist Matt Killen was at Standing Rock. He joins us now with more about the experience. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So the announcement last night, seen as a victory for the Sioux and also those that stood with them, it was primarily a fight over water, but not only that. What attracted you to this protest?
Well, me and Don Ford, Rachel Petrowski, we were filming a documentary on community activism and government. The project's called What's Next? And we wanted to go and focus on how they were actually operating and sustaining themselves as a community. And that's what we focused on. And we saw that they had everything that you would need in a town. They had everything from, you know, first aid to a kitchen. They had a law office. They had literally just about everything that you would need.
So literally a tent city sprung up to support this ongoing group of protesters that had camped out at the site.
Right. The inspirational part of it is that it didn't stop at the borders of the camps. It went to Los Angeles. It went to Seattle. There were protests all over the country in support of their action. Mark Ruffalo sent solar-powered battery trucks out there so they could have electricity for their stoves. Like, it just goes on and on as to how many people contributed to stopping this pipeline.
The optics of putting a pipeline under a river through a Native American reservation on sacred ground, terrible optics for the oil company. And so that attracted a lot of interest. But this became a flashpoint in a larger sense. What is it about this particular confrontation between Standing Rock and the authorities, do you think, drew so many people like yourself to be part of it?
I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with what can they get away with? You know what I mean? Like, and as far as Native Americans, it's actually kind of overlooked how often Native Americans are racially oppressed. If you go into the surrounding towns of Standing Rock, I mean, that's exactly what you see. You hear stories from the natives and the leaders there that they don't go out at night, that they don't, you know, go to places alone. If they go into town, their car is very clean so that they don't have a reason to get pulled over. It goes on and on. I actually met someone, Yolanda Bluehorse, who told me a really horrific story about racial oppression. I won't get into the details because it is horrific, but it's hard to, you know, keep that into context. A lot of people don't think about it.
So in addition to the fight over clean water, activists felt the need to stand with Native Americans more generally.
Exactly. I think that's what brought, you know, the thousands of veterans that recently showed up, and the fact that the Native Americans there were asking for white people to come down and use their privilege to sort of stand against these oppressors, because they won't do as many bad things. And so it seemed like a good idea, and it worked.
Did you protest, or were you there primarily to film your project?
I was there primarily to film. There wasn't a protest that during the time that I was actually there. And it wasn't, it's like literally the difference between protesters and water protectors. So they are water protectors. They go whenever it's absolutely necessary for them to do that. They don't antagonize the people there, the police that are there. They wanted to keep it as peaceful as possible. They strived very hard to do that. And I think that it was amazing the way that they were able to achieve this without, you know, being violent in any way. I think that's the biggest takeaway from this.
It was resolved peacefully, at least for now. The U.S. Army Corps has said it will not allow the pipeline to go forward. Symbolic victory only? Obviously, Donald Trump is going to be president, and he may take a very different tack when he assumes control of all the federal agencies.
Right, and I think that, you know, what we've seen here in the Dakota Access Pipeline is a training for how to operate peaceful protests. And we're going to need a lot of that under Trump. That's just the situation. I don't know that I would call this necessarily like the victory, but this is, yes, a victory. Everyone has a lot more work to do, a lot more responsibility to fulfill in making sure that our water, our environment, and, you know, we are protecting the health of our citizens and our future.
Your project will be finished when?
My project is actually, it doesn't have a due date yet, quite yet. We're still filling in some spaces and things like that. I'll keep that posted on the website and on...
And that is?
Well, there's two websites. So there's United Earthlings, and it's united-earthlings.com. And that's a site which teaches advocacy and different things, you know, different ways to operate. Use the media, public relations, videography, photography, web design. It teaches all of that so that people can go out there and have a voice of their own. And that's where I'm going to be updating everything as far as the project goes. And then there's also whatsnextdocumentary.com. And that's just where you can kind of go and get an idea of how that works.
Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Activist and filmmaker Matt Killen, part of the Standing Rock activism that recently came to a conclusion. Cole Pepper up in a moment. Keep listening.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President-elect Trump's choice for Defense Secretary, retired Marine Corps General James Mattis, is known for his tough stance on Iran and ISIS. He needs a special congressional waiver to take the post, a look at Trump's cabinet pick, and what it would mean for U.S. military strategy. Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
Coming up on The Next Reveal, the lawyer in charge of defending poor people in New Orleans takes a stand.
We're going to say no, these are not our cases.
His office is refusing to defend people accused of the most serious crimes.
The armed robberies, the rapes, the murders, a lot of the sex offenses.
The goal? To break the public defender system in order to fix it. On The Next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, another loss for the Jaguars, who are now officially eliminated from the playoff chase.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Lots of football to talk about, but we start with the Jags as Cole Pepper is on the line this morning for us. Hey, Cole, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, I guess it's all about mathematics here with the Jaguars in the playoff chase. I think we all knew deep down, long before yesterday, that the Jaguars were not making the playoffs.
Yep.
But a 20-10 loss to the Denver Broncos really clinched it mathematically. How did they do it? Let us count the way. Roughing the passer penalty in the second quarter, it led to a touchdown drive for the Broncos. The pass bobbled by wide receiver Allen Robinson. It was intercepted. That led to a field goal. Third time this year that Robinson, by the way, has bobbled a potential catch into an interception.
Hmm.
Blake Bortles threw another interception. It was returned for a touchdown, the 11th in his 3 years in the league. That's the most in that span. In the fourth quarter, they called a running play on 3rd and 10 while trailing by 7. That didn't work. And then Bortles got the ball back and fumbled with a minute 27 to play with the Jaguars down 7. That led to a late Denver field goal. Well, let's just stop there because that's plenty. It's just sort of the same litany of mistakes, not taking advantage of opportunities. The Denver came in playing with a backup quarterback. Their starting quarterback, Trevor Siemian, was out with a foot injury from last week. Paxton Lynch, a rookie, making his second start, and the Jaguars couldn't take advantage. So now they're 2-10, and next up they host the Minnesota Vikings. Hey, at least for that game, Melissa, there'll be something to look forward to. They'll be inducting wide receiver Jimmy Smith into the pride of the Jaguars, the team's ring of honor.
Oh, very nice. But the fans are so demoralized. I mean, it's hard to root for, you know, how do you keep a fan base motivated under this kind of record?
Well, that's a great question. I think the answer is you provide hope. And the two best ways to provide hope for the Jaguars right now are, number one, that Blake Bortles comes out of his funk, returns to looking more like the quarterback. It looked like he was on the precipice of, you know, having a successful career last year. If he can do that, then there would be some hope here in the last four games. The other thing would be make a move as with the coach, because right now fans don't understand, and frankly, neither do I, why there hasn't been a change made with the head coach. Doesn't mean you have to find your new head coach right now. You give hope that that's going to be somewhere out there. By the way, rumors have resurfaced yet again that the Jaguars have had conversations with Tom Coughlin about some kind of possibility of Coughlin coming back. Maybe not as head coach, maybe in a different role, but that would certainly be one thing that would help give the Jaguars fans a little bit of hope.
Wow, yeah, that would be huge news. All right, college football, bowl games, lots of football on your plate this morning.
Yeah, the football playoffs are set. After all the controversy that led up to and, frankly, it followed the announcement, it's interesting to note that the four teams chosen by the committee happen to be the four major conference teams with the best record. So maybe there shouldn't be so much controversy. Alabama's undefeated. Clemson, Ohio State, Washington all have one loss. Everybody else who was in the conversation had two losses or didn't measure up. So those are the four who will play for the national championship. Alabama will be the prohibitive favorite. They are the unbeaten team and have been number one pretty much all year long. They have been just terrific this year. Taxpayer Bowl, by the way, formerly the Gator Bowl, announced their matchup for this year's game. It'll be Kentucky against Georgia Tech. Not exactly a historic matchup, but Kentucky usually travels well, and particularly considering they haven't played the bowl game since 2010 and have never played in a bowl game here in Jacksonville. I think you'll see a lot of Kentucky fans coming into town for that one. Not sure if it's going to motivate Georgia Tech fans. Yeah, there'll be a lot of blue. I'm not sure about whether the gold will be coming to town with Georgia Tech. So we'll keep an eye on that. The Gators will play in the Outback Bowl against Iowa. Florida State is heading to a very intriguing matchup. The Orange Bowl to face Michigan, that'll get a lot of attention. And Georgia takes on TCU in the Liberty Bowl.
Finally, last but not least, Cole, you want to talk about high school football. There is a lot to crow about. The youngest players in this community are going for state championships. This is pretty exciting.
Yeah, and I will say most of it, in the 20 years that I've covered sports in Jacksonville, I think this is the best overall high school football season from a team perspective. There have been years where there have been a ton of top recruits coming out of Jacksonville, and there are some good recruits coming out of Jacksonville, but I think from a team perspective on multiple levels, this is the best year that I've seen in 20 years. In fact, four teams have made it all the way to the state finals this week in Orlando. Thursday, Bulls faces Coco for the 4A title. Bulls is undefeated. Coco is number one in their classification. Their only loss is to the number three ranked team in the country, Bishop Gorman out of Las Vegas. So this will be a big one. And Corky Rogers, of course, who had so much success at Bulls, back in the state title game yet again, looking for the school's 12th state title. And it would be his first in 5 years. Friday, then, down in Orlando, two more area teams will be playing. University Christian plays for the 2A title, and Ponte Vedra, who's undefeated, plays for the 5A championship. Ponte Vedra's had a great year, but they're running up against a team, Plantation American Heritage, that is absolutely loaded with talent every year. That would be a huge win for Ponte Vedra if the Sharks can win there. And then Saturday, Trinity Christian plays for the 3A title. So 2A, 3A, 4A, and 5A all have representation from Northeast Florida. Again, I think it's just been an absolutely tremendous season for high school football in Northeast Florida.
Well, kudos to all of them. Hope they all do well on the field. And always good to see you on the show every Monday. Cole Pepper, follow him on Twitter. Download the Sam and Cole podcast for all of the local sports news and notes. Thanks, Cole.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our show's producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or the WJCT app. And next on Diane Rehm, retired Marine Corps General James Mattis is known for his tough stance on Iran and ISIS. But because he's recently been active duty, President-elect Trump's choice for defense secretary needs a special congressional waiver to take the post. A look at Trump's cabinet pick and what it might mean for U.S. military strategy. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.